came up with the goods.
So impressive. We bow to your greater knowledge. Lots of half-man, half-biscuit fans out there. Who knew?
Right. Thank you so much for all your messages today. And there have been many of them. We are both back tomorrow from 6 o'clock here with you. Chancellor's speech at midday. That's on Adrian's show. Matt Chorley will be looking back at that from 2 o'clock this afternoon and getting right across all the conference stuff from Liverpool as well. Have a wonderful day in the meantime.
Vicky's next.
BBC Radio 5 Live. Nikki Campbell. The voice of the UK.
Morning. Hope you had a nice weekend. Let me ask you this. Do you share Labour's optimism? Look at the rain. Things can only get wetter. Look at Labour. Things can only get better. That's going to be Rachel Reeves, the Chancellor's message. There has been moaning and criticism of Starmer's speeches thus far from within. Frigir Kier, the harbinger of gloom, talking the economy down, knocking consumer confidence, some people argue, causing much disquiet. People are saying we need more sunny uplands. Where are these sunny uplands? Rachel Reeves, she got a lot of free garb. Will she be wearing sackcloth or designer? Well, it's going to be the latter, I think. She is designing a budget as we talk. And she says, ultimately, there's going to be tough choices. We don't mean mauve or plum. Ultimately, it's going to come good. Now, maybe all that stuff is froth and nonsense, but she's going to be singing a very different song from Starmer. And the gift they didn't want was the economic legacy. They say, that black hole. Rachel Reeves says she has never been more optimistic about the country's fortunes. It's quite a change of tone. Still going to be kind of no pain, no gain. But she says if we get this right, stability and reform, the prize is immense. We're going to hear lots of Reevesian language, tough choices. I'm going to level with the British people. I make no apologies for levelling with the British people. I'm making tough choices. I'm not going to play fast and loose. I'm not going to make any apologies for not playing fast and loose. Working people, all that, but a very different vibe. You know, we got this. And the word of the morning is the prize. What is the prize as far as you're concerned? So, pensioner, are you optimistic? Want to own your own home? Are you optimistic? House builders? Optimistic. Work in construction? Optimistic. Are you a carer? Are you optimistic? Have you had your pay dispute resolved? Teacher? Resident doctor? Train driver? Are you optimistic? Do you live on the Greenbelt? Are you optimistic? Tensions today, of course, from the trade unions as ever on the winter fuel payment. That goes without saying almost, doesn't it? Do you share Labour's optimism? Get in touch.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate. Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693. Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms for our terms of use and privacy notice.
And here is the news from Dina Campbell.
Thank you, Nikki. Good morning. Rachel Reeves will use her first speech to the Labour conference as Chancellor to try to brighten the party's message after weeks of dire warnings about the state of the public finances. She'll promise a budget of real ambition, with no return to austerity. Her speech could be overshadowed by continuing discontent over the decision to scrap winter fuel payments for millions of pensioners and questions about party donations. BBC News has found a doubling of the number of crimes involving machetes, swords and zombie knives. Police figures show they were used in around 7,000 crimes in 2019. That was up to more than 14,000 last year. Possessing a zombie knife or machete becomes illegal from tomorrow. The final phase of the post office inquiry will begin today, looking at current practice and procedure at the business. The inquiry was set up after hundreds of sub-postmasters were wrongly convicted of stealing money from branches based on evidence from the faulty Horizon IT system. Analysis of government figures suggests that in the first half of this year, an average of 50 pubs have closed a month in England and Wales. The pandemic, inflation and cost of living pressures are being blamed for the closures.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live. Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Yes, so optimism, that's what they want to instill and install and instigate after some gloomy stuff thus far. Talking about that black hole, of course. So it's the contended black hole. But things weren't great. And we know that. You know that. He who smiles has not yet heard the bad news. Bertolt Brecht. The future's so bright, I gotta wear shades. Tim Bark 3. Number 21 in 1986. Which are you? Or are you somewhere in the middle? Optimistic, confident, quietly confident? Are you a gloomster? Are you a doomster? Sunny uplands or dreich grey rain? Are you looking outside or are you looking ahead? Put on your designer's glasses. What's your vision? 08085 909 693 85058 on the texts. And so, what we got? I'll tell you what we got. First off, before we hear from Jamie in Ellesmere Port and Delith in Aberystwyth, let's hear from Rachel Reeves in Liverpool.
The prize,
sharing
if we can bring that stability back, which I'm determined to do, and if we can unlock private investment, is immense. I've never been more optimistic about the prospects for our country and for our economy, because if we make these reforms, if we bring back this stability, if we bring business back to Britain, if we help small businesses grow and create jobs and prosperity, then there's no end to what we can achieve. There is so much potential.
Always getting a bit JFK at the end, where wasn't it? Never been more optimistic. What do you make of that? Jamie in Ellesmere Port, Delith in Aberystwyth. I think it's going to be a big one this morning. Get your call in, get your text in. It's a call or it's a text. That's a tough choice. Good morning, Jamie. Hi, Delith.
Morning.
Morning. Yeah, Delith, do you share Labour's, he said, bashing the microphone with his hand. Do you share Labour's optimism, Rachel Reeves' optimism, that the prize is the word of the day? You heard her. What do you think, Delith?
Well, I think I'm a naturally optimistic person, so I really want to be there and believe that. But I think the reality on the ground for us, I'm a small business in a seaside resort in mid Wales. And I think, you know, the reality on the ground is that we've got our customers coming in. It's not an essential, I'm a toy and model shop. So we've got our customers, and especially our older ones, are already really concerned about what's happening to their levels of income in the next few months. You know, they're worried about paying their energy bills and their rising costs. And, you know, that's going to have a knock-on effect for us as a business. But to hold, you know, get that silver lining, I'm holding on to those words around investment. Because actually what is needed is that local investment in local infrastructure. We need much better parking in Mid Wales. We need better, you know, public transport and those initiatives to attract tourists to our area. If people spend money in our local businesses, our independent businesses, that money is going to stay in that local economy and, you know, drive that way. So, you know, my plea is, you know, for there to be policies to support local small businesses to develop and thrive in that way.
Thrive. She's talking about, you know, business rates, and she's talking about keeping corporation tax as it is. There have been cuts in transport infrastructure, of course, but it's very different on a local basis as well. But she says there's going to be no return to austerity. And then others are saying, what do you make of this, Jamie? Stay there, Delith. Jamie, others are saying, well, it depends what you mean by austerity. What do you make of it, Jamie?
To be honest with you, I mean, I'm not politically minded to a degree. I mean, I can only sort of see it from my level. I mean, I'm 22, nearly 23 now. And since I was 18, I've not really seen anything. And I'm not trying to be all dire, but I've not really seen anything but misery. I mean, looking at it now from my perspective, if I want to get something like a house, you know, I've got to save 50, 60, 70 grand just to put a deposit down, just to make the actual monthly payments affordable. I mean, it's just unbelievably difficult and that's doing it with a partner as well. If you're doing it on your own, you know, I don't know how people can cope, to be honest.
Yeah, it's the building, you know. She said this morning in an interview, I think it was with Rachel, I listened to a lot of them, Rachel's was by far the best, by the way. She wants to, you know, stop the blockers and encourage the planners and the builders. Do you think that's going to help, this massive house building programme, the likes of your good self, Jamie?
I mean, if they can pull it off, then I think it will have an effect, but it definitely won't stop the issue. I think the issue at the moment is the interest rates more than anything. I mean, people that I speak to, even though if they say, oh, you know, we can put a 5% deposit down, you're still going to be stuck with that huge monthly payment. Now, obviously, I know a lot of your listeners will have mortgages and I don't. I know it's a commitment, but I think, you know, 1.5 million new homes, it won't really put a dent in what they're saying. So, no, it's hard for me to see the silver lining and everything, really.
There in the toy shop, Delith, what sort of ups and downs and fluctuations have you noticed over the last couple of years? Something that Rachel Reeves is mentioning a lot. And who, I mean, we're talking about mortgages there with Jamie. If you were Rachel Reeves, if you were Labour, you would mention it a lot. Truss. What have been the ups and downs since roundabout then for your business, Delith?
I mean, I think it's that instability, really. You know, like you say, the trust is a big word, and I don't think it's currently there, you know.
Sorry, I said trust, not trust.
Well, I think trust. We need to trust what's going to happen, don't we?
Yeah.
I think that was really difficult. There has been so many ups and downs and uncertainty. And what's been really difficult, you know, we've had our customers coming in over the summer months and they've saved so hard for their holiday. And they talk about saving all year. And then even when they're on holiday, they're really careful to make sure that their budget lasts for the number of days that they're away for and things. And it's, you know, it's that uncertainty, isn't it? And having to be so cautious. And careful, even when you're trying to enjoy yourself on your holiday that you worked so hard for.
For you, it's the run up to Christmas. Somebody who owns a toy shop, right? That's the next few months are crucial for you, aren't they?
Yeah. And I've only just taken over the business. So my dad had the business for a number of years, and he passed away, and I've just taken it over. So I'm coming with a renewed enthusiasm, I hope. But I know, you know, talking to him over the years, and he would talk about, you know, quiet days and, you know, the disruption to the business because things were happening in the local area and all those sorts of things. And that's where I'm coming from with that local investment in terms of the parking and stuff, just allowing people to get back into your high street. Everything happens out of town now, so it's really difficult. You know, we want to see that footfall and regenerate the local towns and make them great again.
This is why it's so interesting hearing from our listeners this morning. It's the micro stuff that makes such a difference to people. Jamie's there, Delith is there, Kathy in Peterborough, another small business owner, I do believe. Rachel Reeves is trumpeting the fact that they will be a pro-business party, pro-growth, the most pro-business party. I want to see businesses around the world looking at Britain as the best place to invest. That is the prize that is on offer, and it is guiding every decision I make as Chancellor. She wants some fish and chips, Kathy. She could go to your shop, couldn't she?
Oh, definitely, yes. That would be great. Excellent publicity for us. Yes, I would agree with your previous the previous person who was talking. It is about making small towns more accessible to people. Toilets as well as parking seem to have disappeared from the centre of Peterborough, and quite a number of shops and pubs have closed as well. So the footfall is definitely not there, and that would be something that would make a big difference to us.
Sometimes optimism is something you just, it's indefinable, something you feel inside. It's in your, you feel it in your maw, you feel it in your guts. How are you feeling about Labour's optimism? Is it misplaced or is it on the money?
I'm feeling cautiously optimistic about it. I can understand that there's a big hole being left for them, and I understand the caution. But I do feel that gradually we will see improvement. I don't know exactly what's going to change for me with my small business, my fish and chip shop. I've heard that VAT won't be going up, which is a big relief. I would like to see it go down for small businesses, if I'm honest, because VAT is very, very high and very difficult to cope with. But at least it's not going up. So I do hope that more investment will be made that will support small businesses. I know that they are keen to support workers, and I approve of that. I think that's really important, but I think it needs to be remembered that small businesses employ people, and therefore to continue to employ them, they need support as well.
I mean, is there anything, all of you, just briefly, because we've got to mention it, people are mentioning it on the text. Some say, oh, it's froth and nonsense, and some say it's hypocrisy. What do you all think, Jamie, Delith, Kathy, about all the free gear, the free designer glasses, and I think she had about £15,000 worth of free clothes, something
like that. I mean, I think it was said pretty well before. You know, we all buy our own clothes. Everyone I know buys their own clothes. Why do they need it? I think Rachel Reeves said earlier on the show, she said, oh, you know, I was campaigning, so I needed to look smart. Well, so do we. When we go to interviews, when we go here, there, you know, whatever it might be that we're doing, we have an expectation of us to dress smart. I work in a job that I have to dress smart. You know, no one's buying my clothes for me. Whether or not that makes me a bit cynical, so be it. But yeah, that's my opinion on it.
I would say I agree to a certain extent with that view. I do think probably, and this obviously is not my experience, but I do think that if you're appearing publicly as often as politicians are, then they have to have a whole range of clothes because they would be criticised for wearing the same thing twice. So
I completely understand that point, but it's not. You know, it's not that they can't go out and buy those clothes themselves. Like, what? Why would they need people to buy them for them? I don't understand. I mean, there's many people that I work with who have to change their clothes every single day to go onto meetings, wearing a suit, whatever it might be. Our clients will have expectations that we look smart, that we change our clothes. No one's buying us clothes. That's all I'm saying. I think it's quite hard for me to justify, to be honest.
Yeah, I think there's something there about being really open and transparent and not letting yourself be have those opportunities for criticism. I think, you know, there's that thing I did mention trust instead of trust before, but, you know, we want to trust the people are doing the right thing. And you can only do that by being open and transparent and letting people know. I mean, there's all sorts of, you know, jobs where you get hospitality and all those sorts of things. And you have to be really open and declare them. And, you know, if you go on Instagram and you're an influencer, you have to say when it's a paid piece of work, don't you? So that people can accept that that's what's happening there. And it's just about people being really open about it. I mean, security-wise, if you go to a big sporting event, you know, if you need to be in the hospitality, then maybe you could pay for it, like everybody else would need to. So, yeah, I think don't let yourself be open for that criticism because things.
Yeah. I think it goes back as well. Excuse me. If they're going to cut all of this winter fuel allowance for all of the pensioners, if they're going to do all of that and then still accept donations and, you know, walk around with these new, what is it, Kirsten Armroyd glasses, I think it's just, it's hypocritical, isn't it?
This is not at the heart of our debate this morning, but, a lot of people are saying it is relevant because if you're cutting 300 quid for, you know, pensioners, as you say, Jamie, and, you know, it's all very well, there's going to be no gain without some pain. If you're on 170,000, Kirsten, and the rest, and a lot more, and the gold-plated pension, you know, buy your own glasses. There is that. And that's kind of creeping into all of this, I guess, at the moment. Tom in Blackpool. Good morning, Tom. Louise Cooper coming up as well, financial analyst and lecturer at Kingston Business School. Just what we need. Hi, Louise. Tom, what do you think? Are you feeling optimistic? Do you share Labour's optimism? That's the question this morning. Thomas?
No, not really. I mean, so one of the things that we're focused on, we're a startup business. And creating a business, I think one of the other callers just mentioned it, but creating a business has become so risky and so expensive over sort of the last 10 years. And the thought of taking away the one sort of reward, if you actually make it, which is a capital gain, and treating it as income, which is obviously a lot less risky. How many entrepreneurs are going to say, well, I may as well just work for someone else and not create the business and take the risk that then creates 98% of the jobs in the UK? So, no, I think it's become a very risky and expensive environment to start a business in the UK.
She's clearly said that well, she's clearly said that she's saying nothing about capital gains tax, but CGT, a lot of people are saying it's going to happen, putting it in line with income tax. How would that affect you?
Well, it's someone like myself, say, for example, you're a tradesman and you're a plumber and you're working for a plumbing business. What reason would you have to gamble it all and start your own plumbing business? Because what you'd be saying is, I'm going to take the gamble of opening a business, getting a van, national insurance, minimum wage, which is incredibly expensive, pension contributions, childcare, train fares, which have gone through the roof. And then if I get all the way to the end and manage to sell my business, you're then going to take half of it away. Whereas if I carry on working, there's no risk. I'm not putting my house on the line. I'm in the exact same position. And that's the thing that people miss when it comes to capital gain, is you could lose it all. You know, when you're making an investment, whether it's your own business or investing in someone else's, you're making an investment that could go to zero. So to then take any upside, take half of it away, you're basically taking the reason to make that gamble away. Whereas when it comes to income and working for someone, that's not your risk. So that's a much safer environment to be in. So you're going to get people who are saying, well, why should I take the risk? Why should I invest when I'm losing half of it, when you can go to countries around the world where there's zero tax?
I think we should bring Louise in. Good morning, Louise.
Good morning.
As I was saying in the intro there, there's been a lot of criticism that the garb that Keir Starmer was wearing was that of the funeral director, and now we've got some bright colours coming into play. But it's all words, isn't it?
Words are important. So something like 60 to 70% of the UK economy is consumer spending. So how people feel about the future dictates how the economy is doing. So the doom and gloom, as Andy Haldane, the previous chief economist at the Bank of England, said, was both unnecessary and unhelpful. And I guess he hit the nail on the head, right? So all the doom and gloom has affected, the economy has slowed. The consumer confidence figures we had out a couple of days ago were truly dire. You know, the message has not helped. I don't think the sudden about turn and now let's be all optimistic is going to have any impact until we actually know what the Chancellor announces on October the 30th.
It's a change of tone which has been called for as well. Do you buy this stuff about the prize is amazing if we get this right, if we get through this, if we get through this dark tunnel? Look at the light at the end of it. It's going to be amazing.
So since they've come to power, and this was going to happen anyway, so it's nothing to do with the politics of it, we've now got debt to GDP of 100%. Pre the global financial crisis, it was 35%. So we've effectively over tripled our debt relative to the size of the economy, national debt, government debt, taxpayers' debt, in something like 18 years. I mean, it's been phenomenal. Now it's all very well to say that. Well, what does it actually mean? It means we are living beyond our means, that we have a lifestyle, education, NHS, policing, spending that we cannot afford. I mean, that's what it means. I mean, brutally speaking, that's what it means. More of us need to work, more of us need to pay taxes, and we can't afford the lifestyle we currently have. That is what it means. And so they are completely correct to say we need growth, we need growth, we need growth, because if you have growth, you can pay your debt off. The problem is a lot of the policies they've announced are anti-growth. So, or the policies they've, you know, that have been swirled around are anti-growth. But also, when you've ruled out increases to national insurance that families pay, income tax and VAT, if you've ruled out those big three, which raise the vast majority of tax, if you've ruled out those three big three, your options for raising more money are very limited. So they've kind of boxed themselves in a corner. They've highlighted the problem. The problem is growth. Liz Truss identified the problem is growth. Everybody knows we have a growth and productivity problem in the UK. The problem is, if we want a better standard of living, we need to get more people working, and we need to get more people paying tax, and we need to use our government money in ways that boost future growth and in a long-term sustainable way, rather than just handing over £10 billion of public sector pay increases with no increase to productivity.
Mm. So if Blair was education, 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 this lot are growth, growth, growth. But they were also get elected, get elected, get elected, weren't they? That was the thing. Get it, get over the line. Is there anything in this, you know, $22 billion black hole? I mean, lots of people say the truth is somewhere in the middle. What do you say?
Truth is somewhere in the middle. To be honest, we've had three major things. We've had a global financial crisis, we've had a pandemic, and we've had, you know, Russia invade Ukraine, which had a massive inflationary problem, right? So frankly, we've had three major crises. So is it a surprise that our debt is extremely large? No. Everybody in the West, you know, everybody, America has got huge debt to GDP. Most of Europe has got huge debt to GDP. So, you know, an odd 10 billion here or there, frankly, misses the point. And the other point I would make about that huge debt is when a country becomes hugely indebted, the politicians lose the power to change people's lives because there's no money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to political instability. And we've got a lot of political instability anyway within the country, social media, a country that is fracturing, external intervention into the country's politics. There's lots of reasons for, instability within a country. But when people are fed up with the way it's being run, and then on top of that, you've got huge debt, the bigger problem I see is that because of this huge debt we've had since what 2009, 2010, the problem is governments lose power to change people's lives, and at that point socially it gets really messy.
This black hole, if the conservative, that's so interesting. Great insights. That's why you're here. If the conservatives had not promised that money and spent that money, some people say, well, Labour would have been onto them like a rabid dog.
Well, they were, weren't they? The other problem is the NHS, right? The data on the NHS is truly appalling. If you adjust for inflation, spending on the NHS in the last 10 years, although everybody likes to paint the Tories as, oh, they destroyed the NHS. Actually, the amount of spending in the NHS, inflation adjusted, went up by a third in the last 10 years. We have poured money into the NHS. We have got 17% more workers. We've got
That's why West Streeting is saying reform, reform, reform.
And he's completely right, right? He's utterly, utterly, utterly. We have poured so much money into the NHS, and it's been poured into increasing headcount. 1.4 million workers. 1.4 million people work in the NHS. That's up 17%. And yet last year, 12% fewer operations happened. So, given that the NHS is such a massive part of our spending, by the way, welfare is as well, and that needs huge reform. Given the NHS is such a massive part of its spending, it needs to be reformed radically and quickly.
So listen, if you are a pensioner, are you feeling optimistic? Do you share Labour's optimism, Rachel Reeves' optimism? If you want to own your own home, we've heard an excellent call on that already, somebody on 35k, you need 70k for a deposit. That was Jamie in Ellesmere Court. Are you sharing the optimism? If you're a house builder, you work in construction, are you sharing Labour's optimism? If you're a carer, what about social care? What about the fact that the government's plan cap on care costs was scrapped by Rachel Reeves two or three months ago, wasn't it? If you work in, as Louise said, if you work in the NHS, are you feeling optimistic? Do you share Labour's optimism? If you are on welfare, get in touch. It's a big one this morning. It's an important one. And it's great that we're hearing from you on this, taking that cliche alert temperature of the nation. Neil in Chichester, Louise in Ramsbottom. Good morning to you, Louise. Good morning to you, Neil.
Hi, good morning, Nicky.
Good morning. Neil, hi, Neil. Do you share Labour's optimism? She's talking about the prize.
Not in the slightest. I listened to Rachel Reeves this morning, and to be honest with you, I felt even more doomed for this country than I did before. They were great ones at slagging the Tories for sleaze and everything else, and now we've got Starmer Gate and Clove Gate, and we've got the pensioners, and can I congratulate the unions on forcing Labour to a vote at their conference with regards to you know, the scrapping of the winter fuel allowance, I can't see any reason to stay in this country. You know, what growth have we got? None. One of the ladies you've just had on has said GDP debt is 100%. We've got to look at the welfare budget. We've got to look at the NHS, all the big areas that are costing huge amounts of money, and they've got to be reformed. And it's the BMA that in 1984 stopped reform of the NHS, and now they're going to do it again. And the last thing I'd like to say is Rachel Reeves, 6 months before the election, I believe that people coming into power are given an overview of exactly what the country, you know, what they're going to take over should they be elected. Rachel Reeves knew about the any black hole before the election, and they were not honest to the population.
The OBR looking at that, and I think, as Louise said, the truth is perhaps somewhere in the middle, but the OBR are certainly saying there was some shenanigans going on. Henry Zeffman, our chief political correspondent, in 1 second. He's in Liverpool for whatever reason. Everyone's talking about growth, growth, growth. Utterly, utterly, utterly. If anyone wants to say a word three times, you're very welcome. So, Henry, in a second. Louise in Ramsbottom, do you share Labour's optimism?
Oh, blimey, Nicky. I listened to this and subsequent... Well, you've done other programmes on it. What I find depressing is the public, the general public in this country, in the UK. I can't believe how negative he's been in for, 4 months? He's done some really great things. I'd like to just say one thing about the clothing and the glasses and the freebies. Why do people think that he or other members of the prominent figures are given these things? They're given them because they are representing Britain. What they're saying is, look, these are a pair of glasses. Oh, I like his glasses. I'll go and buy a pair of them. Oh, I like what she's wearing. Celebrities get it. I bet you've been offered
to have
something for free.
Not allowed to take them.
Oh, really?
The majority of people don't buy £2,000 glasses.
If I have to buy something which I'm only going to wear on the telly, I will, in my freelance work, and I do freelance work as well, I will put in a claim for it, and I will not wear it out with, because it got to be... talking to a former watchdog host here. So I've got to keep it. I'm not allowed to take donations. Somebody sent a ukulele book to me, and I had to check it through that it's okay to take it.
Yeah, I suppose I can understand that, because you're part of the BBC, and the BBC has to be seen to be to be neutral. But why are people so bothered about this?
He's earning £170,000, and he's a £400,000 last year or something like that. I heard that figure, and he's got this gold-plated pension, and somebody's given him £2,500. Why can't he buy his own glasses? That's what people are saying.
He probably always has. But remember, Keir Starmer wasn't born into politics. It's not like these Tory boys that went to Oxford and Cambridge and they were born into privilege. It's all new to him, is this?
He was director of public prosecutions.
He's messed it up a bit. But yeah. Yes, he has. But it wasn't a public figure like in politics. Is very different.
Yeah. And she made the point, Rachel Reeves. You heard. She made the point that she had to go to lots of different things, and she's the first person who's going to get it in the neck when she wears the same thing twice. It's all that stuff, and she's They are representing Britain on the world stage. Louise, great call. I'm glad you said that to counter what other people are saying. Go on quickly.
There's also the point that some of them are looked at by prominent other people that are there to help them, and so we can't have her going out like that. We're going to have to get her something different to wear, or we can't get him going out like that. And it's all part of the game. It's not about being given freebies. It's about it's what happens in politics.
And
of course it's about freebies. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but of course it's about freebies. You know, if politicians weren't allowed to accept any gifts whatsoever, then this country would be far better. We wouldn't have sleaze. And in the majority of industries, you're only allowed to accept goods up to £25.
Did you ever ring up about Boris Johnson or his shower?
I've tried to, but that's immaterial.
You probably because it was too busy.
It's not.
You couldn't
not
get
because,
through.
It's not because it's actually really important. He's on a steep learning curve. Keir Starmer.
I want to hear from. This is all good. This is all very good. Louise, thank you, and Neil, thank you, and of course Rachel Reeves is going to raise that very dodgy spectre of the COVID contracts as well. She's pointing that out, and the inference will be, well, you think this is bad? Free specs, nothing to that. Anyway, the gift that keeps on giving, Henry Zeffman, our chief political correspondent, who's in Liverpool at the conference. Henry, good morning. We are asking this morning, whatever sector people are in, education, whether they're carers, whether they live on the green, where if they're in construction, we're asking if they share Labour's optimism. Still, and I'm looking at the text, the clothing stuff, the free garb, the gifts are coming through because it's seen as a contrast. It's a subtext. Anyway, Henry, what can you tell us?
Well, I think that is so interesting, Nikki, because it is certainly a big fear among senior Labour people I've been speaking to since I got here on Saturday morning that any message they might have wanted out of this first conference since they've been back in power, first time they're having a policy conference in government in 15 years, just risks being eclipsed by all this. And that is a very present fear. Today, the big ticket item from the conference stage is a big speech from Rachel Reeves, the new Chancellor, and she's going to try and move things on. She's going to try and move things on by, as you say, being optimistic, which is not necessarily a word people would associate with her previous 80 days as Chancellor. But it's a conscious effort, I think, to not move away from the rhetoric of tough choices, which she's had for so long, but to talk about the other side of the equation, to say, yes, there are going to be tough choices, but they are in service of certain things, basically in service of ultimately economic growth. Sorry, excuse me.
Why? So, why? Mm.
Sorry, I'm so overwhelmed with excitement at Rachel Reeves' speech. But
no, speaking to me, that's what's exciting. Sorry, Nikki. It's being on the nation's phone-in. That's what it is. Interesting change of tone, as you say, but as we heard earlier on from Louise Cooper. You know, government, in order to change people's lives, governments need money. And she's saying there will be no austerity. But it depends on how you define austerity, Henry, doesn't it?
Totally, it does. And what Rachel Reeves wouldn't say in a series of interviews this morning is whether any of the many government departments are going to see their budgets cut in real terms. And that is quite significant. She said overall that public spending won't fall in real terms, so when you adjust for inflation. But that still might, given they'll want to spend more in certain areas of government, that still might leave open the possibility that some parts of the government do see spending cut. You know, certainly, even though Rachel Reeves is adamant that what she comes up with in the budget at the end of October won't be austerity, it's clearly the case that this government is not going to be able to spend the amounts that perhaps Labour government might hope to spend in certain economic, more benign economic conditions.
Cheers, Henry. Have a gargle and do your brilliant stuff. It's Henry Zeffman there at the conference. With apologies, it's 9:38.
The voice of the UK.
And the home of the Premier League.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And we have the news from Dina Campbell.
Thank you, Nikki. The Chancellor, Rachel Reeves, will promise there'll be no return to austerity in her key speech to Labour's conference in Liverpool this lunchtime. It follows weeks of warnings about the state of the economy and the ongoing row about the decision to scrap winter fuel payments for millions of pensioners. BBC News has learnt that police records of machetes, swords and zombie knives have doubled over the past 5 years. 32 police forces across England and Wales released figures showing the large-bladed weapons appeared in more than 14,000 crime logs last year, up from around 7,000 in 2019. Metropolitan Police say a teenage boy found with stab wounds after a disturbance in Woolwich in southeast London has died. No arrests have been made yet and the boy's family has been informed. Research by BBC Panorama has found that dozens of Tesco products price matched to Aldi, such as chicken nuggets, cottage pie and blackcurrant squash, are not like for like. In the case of chicken nuggets, the Tesco product contained 39% chicken, compared with 60% in the Aldi equivalent. And now for sport with Katie Smith.
John Stones grabbed Manchester City an equaliser in the 98th minute at the Etihad to draw 2-2 with 10-man Arsenal yesterday, who slowed the game down. Arsenal in a resolute defensive display in the second half. City forward Bernardo Silva said only one team came to play football. The point put City top of the Premier League table. Elsewhere, Brighton drew 2-2 with Nottingham Forest, as did Arsenal and Manchester City in the Women's Super League. City boss Gareth Taylor says it's an exciting sign of what's to come if his side can come away with a point against Arsenal despite not being at their best. Meanwhile, a new three-year agreement's been reached with Barclays to remain the title sponsor of the WSL and the Women's Championship. The deal's understood to be in the region of £15 million a year. That's double the previous arrangement, which runs out at the end of this season. Lando Norris took victory in the Singapore Grand Prix. It means the McLaren driver's now only 52 points behind Max Verstappen, the world champion, in the standings. There's six races still to go. And Rory McIlroy says golf is testing him right now. He missed out on the PGA Championship title to Billy Horschel yesterday after it went to a second playoff hole.
On Radio 4, the more you listen, the more you see.
We're living under more tyranny today than our founding fathers did in 1775.
A US presidential election is looming, but underneath, conspiracy culture rears its head once again. And nothing is as it seems.
All those things that we had feared our whole lives was coming true.
Burn the house down and start over. That seems to be the way.
It's America through the looking glass. Join me, Gabriel Gatehouse, as the coming storm continues. Listen on Radio 4 and BBC Sounds.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
The voice of the UK.
On digital radio.
On BBC Sounds.
And ask your smart speaker
to play BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We're talking about businesses. We're talking about optimism. After 10, we're going to be talking about classic small businesses, a staple of the culture of our country. We're going to talk about pubs. We're going to ask you, is it happy hour or is it closing time? Because new figures show more than 50 pubs a month on average were lost in England and Wales. This is merely in the first half of this year. Closed down, demolished, turned into things like flats, offices, day nurseries. I know how tough it is to run a pub. I've not run a pub, it sounded like I did. But I find it, my sister and brother-in-law did. And it's, you know, to bed at 2 and up at 6. Really, really hard-working people. What's going on? We want to hear from both sides of the bar. If you work in a pub house business, if you own a pub house business, if you're a punter, what do you make of it? And isn't it just market forces? We can celebrate, but we can also analyse as well. Have we moved on as a country from the pub? Some people are saying, well, we have. We want a big range of opinions. But if the pub is at the heart of your community, the place where you live, the place that makes where you live very, very special, come on, defend it, wax lyrical, what it means to you. Text and call. That's a good pub, the text and call. Anyway, get in touch. 08085-909-693-85058 on the text. It's 9:43.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693.
Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate.
Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693.
Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms for our terms of use and privacy notice.
Then there's the outdoor smoking ban as well. So, Gemma coming up, Nathan coming up. Are you feeling optimistic? Do you share Labour's optimism? Ben Zaranko is Senior Research Economist at the IFS. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning.
Well, tell us about this £22 billion black hole. On the one hand, Conservatives say they're telling Porkies that they didn't know. The OBR is saying, well, there is stuff that they didn't know. And Labour is saying it comes as a complete surprise. What's the truth of it?
The truth is, annoyingly, that everyone's got a bit of a point. The new government have definitely got grounds to be cross with the public spending plans for this year they've inherited. There are signs that there'll be some pretty big overspends. There'd been promises made and money not set aside to meet them, which makes up a big chunk of that in-year overspend of $22 billion. But then on the other side of it, the biggest single item in there, almost half of the $22 billion, is public sector pay pressures. And about $9.5 billion of the $22 is because this government accepted the recommendations of the pay review bodies, independent bodies, to give pay rises of between 5 and 6% to millions of public sector workers. That's the most expensive single thing on there. And that was a decision they made. They could have pushed back on that. They could have tried to, push that number down, but they chose not to. So both sides, I think, have got a point. But I do think that the new chancellor is right to say that things are a little bit worse than might have been expected before she took office.
Can you chart a course for us, as to what will lead to the prize at the end of it? What needs to happen for the economy to be transformed over the next 5 years so that everybody is optimistic?
Well, I think the glass half full view of the UK economy is that we've been underperforming other similar countries for quite a while. And it's not about us being at the very cutting edge of all the frontier technology and really leading the world. We've actually just got quite a lot of catch-up growth to do. We've just got quite a bit of catching up to other countries in Europe, never mind the United States. And so I think that if you look at where the UK looks unusual, it's the dire state of our transport infrastructure outside of the capital. It's in its relatively low levels of business investment by international standards. And I think this government it sees the route through that as providing some stability, one. Number two, bringing in the private sector where it can, whether that's through changing the rules on pension funds, whether that's a national wealth fund, whether that's planning reform. And then finally, government investment itself. That's the story they're telling. And I think the glass half full approach is if we do make those investments for the future that we've been not doing for a while, you might eventually see some gains. The problem is that's going to require short-term sacrifice. And that's where I think the difficult politics comes into it.
They need to cut welfare, we hear, and they need to get people to be economically active. How easy is that?
That is not easy. I think it's the UK looks like a standout in the sense that we've got a big increase in sickness among working age people and a big increase in number of people claiming health and incapacity benefits in a way that you haven't seen in lots of other countries in Europe. And tackling that, getting people back into work, getting people working full hours, reducing rates of sickness absence, all of that is good for the economy. The challenge is it's a really delicate and complicated policy area where you're working often with very vulnerable people and you need to tread extremely carefully. And one cautionary tale, back in 2012, the coalition government introduced something called personal independence payment, or PIP, which is one of the main disability benefits. And they thought it would end up saving money and reducing the number of people on these benefits. In fact, it ended up doing the exact opposite. So just policy in this area is hard. And this government will want to, I'm sure, take its time and move carefully before embarking on any deep reform.
Thank you so much, Ben. We've got Gemma. That was Ben Zaranko, senior research economist at the IFS. We've got Gemma. And where are you, Gemma? Where are you?
Machynlleth in Mid Wales.
Lovely. And Nathan in Leeds. Good morning. Gemma, another fish and chip shop. Hi, Nathan. Another fish and chip shop owner. We could do an hour of fish and chip shop owners and workers. Do you share the optimism?
Well, to start with, the nation voted for change and good, so I'm optimistic that if the nation backs the new government, then that's a good start, and that's what we need to do. As the start of any journey, it's not going to be all dry at the beginning. They've now discovered some loopholes, financial loopholes, that have come to light since, and that's always going to be the same. It's like opening any business, you discover some new loopholes. So that is not, it's not all doom and gloom, because It's not going to be easy. 70 is going to be tackled against that, as we can see with the winter fuel repayments for pensioners. But I do find it completely unfair that the older people now are taking the brunt of it, because they're the ones that worked all their lives, they're the ones that paid the tax. And why? Because the last government's poor financial decision-making, are they taking the brunt of it? But there are surely other people out there that can take the brunt of it. Like was just mentioned now, there are several things, the personal independent payment, benefits, and just getting the country out, up and working again. If I had more people that wanted to work, I could open more hours. And that's where I'm optimistic that it's going to have a good effect on me.
Why don't you? Why don't you have more people that want to work so you could open more hours? I'm smelling the vinegar. I'm loving it.
Nobody wants to work, unfortunately. Unfortunately, benefits are given out easier and people get penalised to work. And that's because of what the government's policies were put in place. So the harder workers are penalised, and the people that don't work just get what they need to live by. But I live in hope. We can't be all doom and gloom about this. We got through the 2008 financial crisis. We got through the worst of 2020 and 2022 with financial pressures. As a country, we're still going to have to go day by day, but there's some faith at the end of the tunnel for us to survive. And that's for us back in the government and keep spending, keep our economy going. Because at the end of the day, if us as consumers don't spend, there's going to be nothing available on our high streets.
What hours would you open if people were willing to work that you're not open at the moment?
I would be open 7 days a week. We have two shops in one town. As tourist seasons come to an end, we have reduced our hours due to lack of custom this time of year, which is the same for any business in a touristy area. However, I would adapt what I would be doing. I would have deliveries on the go. We could change the way our business model works during the winter months, but due to the lack of staffing, it's not always possible.
Mm. What time do you close? I'm thinking about the fish and chips on the way back from the pub, and we're talking about pubs at 10 o'clock. What time do you close?
At the weekends, we close at 9 o'clock, and during the week, we close at 8:30. But unfortunately, that post-pub trade has gone years and years ago.
Has it? What, really?
Yeah, pubs aren't backed enough either. Pubs are too expensive for people to be staying out late in. It's more of a, we go after work for a couple of drinks and we're home by 7, 8 o'clock at night. When there is events on in town, pubs are backed. But unfortunately, again, they can't stay open long enough either.
This is our next hour, talking about the pub, how things have changed, the demise of the pub, and how we saved the pubs. So the post-pub fish and chip kebab visit, which I remember with such fondness, is a thing of the past. Wow.
Yeah, I feel that trade has passed, particularly for us in our town, but it could be different in other towns. So I'm not going to be all doom and gloom about it. In our area, it's probably not the best. But when we've got events on in our town, it's brilliant. I will stay open till 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night. Anything to get trade through the door. But also, you can't stay open till 10, 11 o'clock at night like we used to be able to do because of the cost of running a business these days. So we're keeping our staff on. We're keeping our fuel going, so our gas and electric. And there's no trade for it. So who pays for that?
Mm-hmm. What about the pubs in your town, just to sort of, you know, aperitif for the next hour? What are the challenges for those pubs? Because all these businesses are interconnected.
I think all the pubs in our town are quite different to each other. So the competition is, they're not very competitive. We've got one large pub that's a family pub that you can go and have a meal. We've got another pub that's just opened back up. And it's just drinks. They're all different. Their opening hours are different. But I think talking to the landlords, there'd be a better comment on it. It depends what people want to do these days. I think the trade of going out drinking all weekend has gone, unfortunately, due to financial pressures. So people can't afford to do it anymore.
Yeah. Key to what we're discussing in the next hour, the question being happy hour or closing time, hearing from punters, hearing from landlords and landladies. And it's great hearing from you, Gemma. Nathan in Leeds, you voted Labour. Do you share Labour's optimism? Do you share Rachel Reeves' vision that the prize is right?
I desperately wish I could. I'm trying hard, but it's difficult at the moment, I think. I work in the construction industry. There was a tier one contractor went into administration last week. That's circa 2,500 jobs. And I think the pause on infrastructure spending, particularly affordable housing grants, means the industry is somewhat in stasis at the moment. You know, it's been 80 days. We've got another, 37 till the October statement. And everybody's holding their breath.
She's going to back the builders, not the blockers. She said that she sells sanctuary. She said that on the radio this morning. She's going to support the builders and stop the blockers. What is a blocker? I don't know. But anyway, is that not good news for you?
It could be. I mean, they seem very reliant upon private sector housing delivery, so the big PLCs of this world. So I'm struggling to see how it's in their interest to release lots of houses all at the same time. I would imagine they make sufficient profit as it is. I don't think you can deliver over 300,000 homes a year without a significant proportion of those being affordable. Given the 1.2 million housing waiting list that we have. And that's always been the case when there's been high housing delivery, that a good proportion has been affordable housing. But they don't seem the mechanisms at the moment to increase that delivery. They're reliant upon more private housing delivery and what you call Section 106 agreements. So essentially the private sector throwing in some money to deliver some affordable housing. It's a modest amount in the big scheme of things. So I think, certainly for us in the October statement, we're really hoping that there's some commitment to more significant affordable housing delivery.
Excellent stuff, Nathan. Thank you. Annie in Carnforth. Hi, Annie.
Hi, Nikki.
I'm glad you've got in touch because your situation absolutely epitomises that of so many people who are so very angry at the moment.
Yeah, me and my partner are both disabled pensioners and we won't be getting our winter fuel payment this winter, and we have applied for pension credit, but we're just above a few pounds above the threshold, so we can't get it. But we're both housebound, so we can't go out anywhere else to keep warm, like sit in a library or a warm bank or anywhere else. We have carers, and the care industry is absolutely on its knees, and I can't understand why they would do something like this, the stopping the winter fuel allowance for so many pensioners, because there will be a lot more pensioners that end up in hospital this winter because they won't be able to afford to have the heating on enough, the houses. We will probably be able to keep it on, but a lot less and a lot lower, a lot less time, because we have to have it on some of the time because we've got carers here. Can't expect them to work in the freezing cold. We're having problems with our care agency. We've had we have six carers in a care team. Five of them left in the last 6 months. And they do get paid above the national wage. It's just that the hours are so antisocial and they work such long hours because there's such a shortage of carers. They always are, absolutely flat out, and they get burnt out. And so there'll be more pensioners ending up in hospital because they're living in cold, damp houses and, probably getting malnutrition as well and or hypothermia. And then there's going to be pressure on the hospitals, which are always in crisis in the winter. And then they're going to be stuck there because there just isn't the social care. It's a complete madness. It's a false economy. I can't think why they would think this was a good idea. They're just making more problems and, creating a huge amount of stress and misery for a lot of pensioners. And
I'm just looking at the clock. How do you feel about this other row? So Rachel Reeves, for example, got a gift of £7,500. I said it was 15k earlier on, cheap at half the price. £7,500 on clothes, earning about 160, whatever. And she got the free accommodation, whatever. How do you think that, does that cut through for you?
I think it just shows that, you know, that they are out of touch the way they live. I mean, she, I think, claimed over £1,000 in for her energy costs in her second home in London last, you know, the last winter. So, you know, I bet she's going to claim again, and all the MPs will be claiming again for their expenses in their London homes. You know, when they are on, she'll be on, I don't know what minister is on, way over 100,000, aren't they?
160, something like that.
Just an ordinary MP is on 90,000. So, you know, they don't need help with expenses compared to people like us. And there's disabled, because we're on disability benefits as well, but that all goes on our care.
All goes on your care. Listen, we're out of time, but... Oh, no, we've not. The music stopped, so you can say a little bit more, and I'll do what they call in the business a dry hand to the news.
I am really frightened about what they're going to do to disability benefits, actually, particularly for people of working age, who there are a lot more on sickness benefit because of COVID. My partner's now got long COVID on top of a severe brain injury, which he caught in hospital, and he's completely bedbound now. So there's lots of people with long COVID, lots of people who are really ill because they can't get operations, so they're not fit to work because they're on the waiting list. There's lots of reasons why in the UK we have much higher, you know, higher levels of people on sickness benefit, and yet they're talking about it as if these people are malingerers, and you know there should be some kind of punitive, you know, we need to get them back to work as if we're, you know, people are just not genuinely ill.
It's very complex. We have to leave it there, but another big slice of wisdom from yourself, Annie, and all our listeners as well. Thank you so much for that. We've already had a taste of the pub debate, inevitably, if we're talking about small businesses and whether they survive or whether they thrive. It's 1 minute past 10.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
The voice of the UK.
Yeah, we've been talking about, you know, optimism generally. On the phone in. So what about your optimism when it comes to pubs? Is it happy hour or is it closing time? Closing time for far too many. New figures, more than 50 pubs a month on average lost in England and Wales alone during the first half of this year. Either closed, been demolished, turned into flats, offices, day nurseries. What is going on?
Want to hear your views, both sides of the bar. If you work in a pub, how's business? What pressures is your business under? Tell us about those pressures. What needs to happen? Can you get the staff? Customer numbers, how do you get them up? Diversifying. All that. There have been lifestyle changes, of course. We heard earlier on from Gemma, who runs a fish and chip shop. It was really interesting that the post-pub